All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta.
Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum has said, "You will own nothing and you will love it." And that's represented by what's going on across the planet today, where the economy of the world is in free fall, and nowhere is it more in evidence than with our own President Biden deliberately trying to sabotage what we have, access to food, other resources. So Americans are in a unique position, really for the first time in our history. We're going to have to provide for ourselves or subject ourselves to the whim of the government. Do you really trust a government to feed you that left 1,000 Americans behind enemy lines in Afghanistan? I don't think so. So where do you go? When you ask the question, who's the best prepper out there today? There's only one answer. Ready-Made Resources and Robert Griswold. I call him King Prepper, and that's how a lot of people think of him. You have everything there you'd want, from night vision to storable food, how to prepare cooking in emergency situations, books and videos on how to prepare alternative energy, communication, first aid that you wouldn't think of, natural antibiotics, you name it, Bob has it. Now, here's the good thing about Bob Griswold that no one else does but him. You don't have to buy anything to talk to him. If you're not sure where to start with your preparation, no obligation phone call directly to Bob. You can talk to him for free. Most people will charge you an arm and a leg for a half-hour conversation. That's not Bob Griswold. He cares about helping America get prepared. Go to readymaderesources.com, or you can call the number directly at 800-627-3809. Again, that contact information, readymaderesources.com, for the best prepping outfit in the country, or call Bob Griswold directly, 800-627-3809.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the American Vindicta Show. For those of you who are actually watching this interview with myself and Mono Gonzalez of Prophecy Watchers, you'll notice in the background that the studio looks a little bit different. We're revamping the studio, so apologize, construction is in process. However, today, Mono and I wanted to talk about CERN. Now, Anthony Patch had a video where he was being interviewed by another gentleman, and they were talking about how at CERN, they were opening up portals and talking with entities. And there's really not much more information on it than that. And you take that side of the coin of what CERN is doing with their technology, be it, I think, it's sometimes ambiguously dark and dangerous, and you flip it to the other side of the coin, where people who are, let's just say, fabricating things, maybe, who are blowing stuff out of proportion for the ability to sell books, the ability to get likes and subscribes and comments, a little bit of showmanship, and then all of a sudden they've got you hook, line, and sinkered. And I think Anthony Patch is not that guy. I think Anthony Patch is probably one of the best researchers out there when it comes to CERN, and he doesn't do that stuff. But Mondo and I were doing some investigations into this, and just, you know, we're researching, and we're still learning more and more and more. So we're not at a final conclusion here. We just want to do an abbreviated discussion of what we found just thus far. And it's kind of ridiculous with some of these people, Mondo. Some people will put out just some of the craziest stuff. Like, there's actual science being done at CERN. And then there's a lot of other very random, weird stuff in videos, movies, and art that's being done there. And then you have the Gothard Tunnel. So, you know, obviously there's a lot of paganism, heathenism, Satanism type of stuff that's happening there. But is there always a there with this place? I mean, as you and I were talking about, it seems like some people have maybe overanalyzed some things a little bit, maybe fabricated the story. And I believe, honestly, because of the way people are on YouTube now and they get paid to be on YouTube, the more crazy you act, the more subscribers. And it's, you know, I've seen this in law enforcement before, but that's kind of my mindset with the people that we're talking about. We're not going to say who we were listening to or what platform we were listening to it on, but it was kind of ridiculous. Mondo, I'll let you take it over.
Well, I think it is important because, you know, I'm in the prophecy world. I've loved prophecy for a long time, and there's no doubt that you try to maintain some level of credibility in doing your own research. And, you know, I come from the, you know, academic side as well, where you had to footnote everything. And you know, but that was good training. Now, on the other hand, you know, here are certainly at Prophecy Watchers, and you and I have had a lot of discussions, we like to address some of the fringe topics. Others as well, I think about Dr. Michael Heiser. He's got a PhD in Old Testament Hebrew and Semitic studies from University of Madison, Wisconsin. That's a pretty serious prestigious school. But he likes to address some of these things too. In I think he's got a program called like Fringe Pop or Fringe Show, or, you know, I forgot what the name of it is. But anyways, you can address these things in a way that is appropriate, but also open-minded. I'm very open-minded. I believe in the supernatural, no doubt. The Bible teaches it. So I also believe in the nefarious nature of humanity and what they're trying to do. And especially as we look prophetically towards the coming end of the age, which I believe we clearly are in. Jesus talks about it. The book of Revelation talks about it. John, I mean, Paul. What you see is as we come to the end of the age, one of the major characteristics is deception and delusion. And during the tribulation period, the 7-year tribulation, I don't believe there's going to be a single atheist at all. These are what we see in the book of Revelation, especially Revelation chapter 9, is people are worshiping demons. People are worshiping the dragon in Revelation 13. I mean, this is pretty amazing. You think humanity is going to be worshiping the dragon? Yes, that's what it says. So now, will they knowingly say, I'm just bowing down to Satan? No, I think, again, that's part of the deception. And in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, God gives humanity because of their rebellion. It says, because they didn't love the truth, God gave them over to strong delusion. So strong delusion doesn't just happen overnight. So it comes in seed form. And again, I think that what we're seeing in our current world, the lack of discernment, is out there. So I guess all of our conversation, when we talk about CERN, as you mentioned, I think it was a good intro. CERN is real. It's a very real scientific endeavor. Not everybody that works there is a Satanist by any means. What we have seen, or what I've seen, is a lot of misinformation. Or, you know, again, I don't think that the people that report on this, again, some of them are Christians. These are people that love Jesus, and they believe that they are doing their job at bringing out some of these satanic things. But however, I think there's maybe a lack of clear thinking or assumption, jumping to conclusions. And I'll give you a few examples as we go on here. But let's first say we're not here. We all joke that, oh no, if we come out trying to promote discernment, we're going to be accused of being part of the Illuminati or something, or double agent. You know, we're about truth. We're about research. What can be truly vetted? There's a lot of things, again, as all of us know, that you see on the internet, or you see visually, or you see a video of, and it's, be careful what you see. There's a lot of false flags that are set out there. Maybe we're one, you know, in many ways, but we're just encouraging good research and, you know, be a critical thinker. So that's kind of my opening monologue, and we'll get to a few examples.
Yeah, you know, and here's the other thing, is for the last like 10, 15 years with CERN going on and a bunch of other crazy stuff happening around the world, evidently there is nothing holy that is happening there. Not to say there's not Christians working there, but the organization, whoever's in control of CERN, obviously most likely is not born again. However, I will say this. It is dangerous, even for guys like us, in this community to go against the grain of certain people mm-hmm. who have said, you know, outlandish statements for the ability to sell books and DVDs. And if you go against that, how dare you? They'll shake their finger at you and they'll sick their people on you. And we've seen it. We have seen it done. I have seen it done personally. I actually have a friend that some people may know, and it was done to him. And so, you know, we're actually taking risk by even, you know, contemplating the fact that some people are being given over to a great delusion right now, and not saying that they're willfully deceiving people, but, you know, if as Jesus says, if he didn't come back in time, there may be no flesh left alive. So, you know, with elements like CERN, and if you didn't know this, the original place for CERN is like 70 miles away from my house. Here's one thing that I do know. They bless the ground. They dedicate the ground that is out there within CERN in Sweden. And like it has something to do with Apollo and Apollyon. And that's what this whole area, the name means. And it, Tom Horn breaks it down beautifully. So that area in Texas does not have that name. So, and it's literally where it would have been at. It's in the middle of a field, a big hay field. I've been there several times. So, you know, it just makes me think, like, what was so important for the new location to be there? Because if the original location, which was, I think, being funded by the University of Texas, they said no and they brought it overseas, why do you think they would do that? Because, you know, obviously, if something goes wrong in the Large Hadron Collider, that potentially could be very bad, maybe for the planet, or at least for the city that this thing is sitting in. What do you think?
Well, I'll say this, that in you mentioned Tom Horn, and Tom Horn's a great researcher, and I've interviewed him many times, and he again, he is a great researcher, and in his book Path of the Immortals, as well as Abaddon Ascending, those books came out a few years ago. He does a deep dive in looking at the geographical connections to where it currently is in Switzerland, and it's, you know, and it's all the different hilltops around there. And again, he goes in talking about the nature of some of the occultic locations. So people can get his research and make their own conclusion on that. But there's no doubt that they have a desire to do research. And what Tom Horn brings up in his books is that some of the original people, they use the word portal. And so they say these things, which, again, are legitimate. They bring up legitimate questions. We want to open up a portal, and we don't care what comes through the other side. Now, these are nuclear scientists saying these things. And so, again, we don't want to simply dismiss the potential nefarious connection. Now, do these guys really, they're not theologians. So do they really understand, like, you know, playing with fire? Well, they say these things.
Let me ask you this question. How long do you think a nuclear physicist has to go to college?
Well, I would say, I mean, I've looked into it myself because, you know, it depends on that. But at least 4 years of undergrad to get your physics degree. And I would say to get your PhD, I know what that takes, at least another 3 years and then probably a fourth year of doctoral dissertation studies and then research for sure. So I would say at least 7 to 8 years.
So 7 to 8 years. And, you know, obviously the first 1 or 2 years doesn't count because you have to learn all the crap. But, you know, let's say 6 years of dedicated study into, you know, your major, you would think that somebody who, you know, got their PhD, and I don't mean to say this in the way that I'm about to say it, but that they wouldn't be an idiot, right? That, you know, this is not a dumb person. This isn't Frank from down the road in the parking lot you know, trying to sell you secondhand donuts. This is a nuclear physicist who says, I'm going to open up a portal, guys. And guess what? I don't care what comes through it. And everybody else goes, well, we care. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, John, we care if you open up a portal. It may not be good. Let me ask you this question. Let's say they open up the portal. And we were talking about this just a while ago. How much energy does it actually take to manifest a portal?
Well, typically what you see is, you know, we use the word portal. Portal is kind of one of those sensational
words. It's a fringe
word.
It's
a sensational word. Like portal, we think of like Stargate, you know, the portal opens up and there now from a physics perspective, I mean, just pure physics, to have some sort of Stargate wormhole requires more energy than we have on Earth. And so, and then to maintain it and to have such a way, when you get in some of the Einsteinian physics, you come to realize that this isn't something that is just easy to do. Okay. We're not even there yet. This, you know, would we be there in another 500 years? I'm not sure.
Is that why they call it theoretical physics?
Yes. But the calculations, the mathematical calculations are certainly easy to figure out. So what they're doing at CERN and the Large Hadron Collider is they're taking singular subatomic particles, putting them at, you know, speed of light or close to it, crashing them together and see what else flies off of that. So they're doing these things in order to understand quantum physics, but that's not the same as actually creating such a degree to have the power to open up a portal and maintain it. Because it's not just opening a door. You'd have to open the door and keep it open and hold it open and create, like, we have doors. What do you put a door on? You put it on a door jamb. So you actually create a something that would hold the door. In the same way, from a physics perspective, they have to do this and they'd have to maintain it. So you have the pure physics. Now, this guy saying Bertolacci or whatever his name is, again, you can look at the research in Horn's material. For him to say these things is just interesting to me. Again, these aren't dumb people. On the other hand, a guy that could be a brilliant nuclear physicist still could be a full-blown occultist. Okay? They really could. So him saying things like this, is he specifically talking about what as Christians or biblical people would think about demons? Not necessarily. Now we might understand it as being, hey, could they open up a portal or a door that maybe a demon would come through? That gets into a lot of theology, for example, and this comes up a lot, is in Revelation chapter 9. It talks about an angel being given a key to the bottomless pit. He comes down, he opens the door, out comes this army of locusts that seek to torment mankind. God, we also know that God oftentimes uses physical things to do, they're supernatural timing, but he uses physical elements to do it. You know, it could be like the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. You know, there's pits down there that God could have easily just opened it up, boom, all of a sudden now you have sulfur, which we have records of, no problem archaeologically. Sulfur, flying sulfur, burning sulfur comes down, lands on you, melts on you. I mean, you could see this stuff. God has no problem using naturalistic means from a supernatural instigation. So in that same way, could it be that the bottomless pit, which is kind of one of the things that Tom Horn maintains in his books, is located in that area? And then when the time comes in their research, that God allows this natural mechanism of a portal being opened by CERN to be the instrument of allowing the demonic hordes to come into our world? Sure. That doesn't bother me from a scientific perspective. Who knows what it's going to be like in a few years. But, you know, that would be my initial reaction, is keeping the balance, being open-minded to the supernatural elements that the Bible says clearly are going to happen. I believe the Bible says it. That's the end of it. It says it's true. How? Not sure. Could CERN be used? Possibly. Currently, though, they're not there yet. But again, do we know everything? That's the other thing. Do we know everything that they're are they telling us all of what they have discovered? No, I'm not that naive.
And I wouldn't think they would be either. You know, this is one thing that I've been building on for a while. All the technology that's coming out, like the AI that you and I previously have talked about, that got a lot of popularity and also got me banned from YouTube for 2 weeks. How dare we, Mondo? How dare we?
You know, pause for a moment. We don't have to bring it all up, but we got banned for what? Talking about the positive benefits. I don't even understand.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah. And, you know, there's like, I have now learned through the team at YouTube that there are like literally keywords that if you say and you're not favored, they will freaking cut the umbilical and you're done. And I got one strike left, man. Well, I'm up to bat. I'm either going to foul or I'm going to strike out or I'm going to hit a grand slam. If I can just get on first plate, that'll be great. But, you know, this is the thing, though. It has to be talked about. And I think it has to be talked about because everything that we're leading to is what I have been calling leading to the infrastructure for the Antichrist. Everything is being led up to the infrastructure for the Antichrist. Mm-hmm. You know, certain procedures, certain rules and laws, wars, rumors of wars, famines, all these things are going to happen. The Bible has talked about it. Jesus has talked about it. And it's all going to be led into the eventual beast system. I think CERN may have a role to play in that. You know, let's listen to what particle physics is real quick. Particle physics is also called high energy physics. It is a field of research that examines the properties and behavior of matter at the smallest scales. The goal is to build a model that explains every physical phenomena based on the properties and interactions of fundamental particles, forces, and fields. To do this, physicists scrutinize the properties of known particles and search for missing pieces. That's what's being done at CERN. That is the, quote, science that CERN is into. Now, what all can come out from that? I mean, honestly, is anyone's guess. Let me ask you this. There's been a speculation that with the wrong term of events, we could have an event horizon actually happen within inside the Large Hadron Collider and create a miniature black hole. And this is, you know, once again, people will take this phantasm and then it will just grow and grow and grow. And it could be a pin drop size black hole that then starts to increase in mass because it's consuming more mass and material. And then, you know, poof goes the world. I don't believe that because it never said it in the Bible. And that's the way I believe in my life. But what's your take on that? Is the science there for it?
You know what? No, I don't think so. I mean, again, for us, the foundation of the Bible, God is not going to allow the earth to get sucked into a black hole because he has to finish his prophetic plan. And Jesus is not coming back to a black hole to rule and reign on earth for 1,000 years. So we have that guarantee, spiritually speaking, that God would not allow mankind to come to that place. Now, theoretically, no doubt, there are, you know, people argue even within the physics world, is there such thing as black holes or do we live in an electric universe? Again, there's a variety of different perspectives on that. But to create a black hole, again, looking at the energy amounts, is not simply going to happen by taking two small particles together. I guess the real question is if people look at it, how does a black hole form? A black hole forms by massive amounts of mass collapsing in on itself. Typically after you look at maybe a neutron star or something like that, where again, a collapsing event of massive amounts of energy. Well, we're dealing with like singular subatomic particles. That's not a massive amount of energy that is going to be collapsing on itself.
Because
you talk about an event horizon is something that has massive amounts of gravity that keeps light itself. So now granted, black holes can be very small, no doubt, but I don't think there's probably enough gravity or enough material on Earth we certainly don't have enough material to even collapse. Even if we were to collapse, I mean, Jupiter is known as a brown, just smaller than what would be a brown dwarf star. And so we're, I mean, you could fit three Earths in the Great Red Spot on Jupiter. So, I mean, the even having the amount of mass seems extremely problematic when you look at the physics involved, that we would, that we could even create a black hole here. That would be my initial response without going into any more detail.
Well, two things. I want you to go into what the electric universe is, because you and I had a conversation where the heck did we stop and eat one of the last caves that we had came out of, which we need to talk to people about, you know, an update on the caving situation. But God, I don't remember where we were at. It was some burger joint. We stopped and we were talking about, you know, the electric universe, like the nerds that we are. And the other thing is, I think if you blow up the wrong kind of thermonuclear weapon, you could actually potentially rip a hole, I think, within the physics of reality, because that's probably one of the only closest events that we can create to a collapsing star. Because a collapsing star is a thermonuclear explosion upon explosion within itself, right? That's what's happening within a star. I think maybe a nuke is the closest thing we could get to it. But like you said, we don't have the mass or the material, which means I don't think we could ever project a wormhole and then send a spaceship through it either, because we are not there scientifically for sure. I know that's one of the things that they are working at CERN. Was the what is it, the bridge, Einstein bridge,
the Rosenstein
bridge or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that's one of the theories that they were working on there, which I'm actually would be excited to see if that would be capable. And there are stories out there very loosely that you can't really find too much documentation on. I think one of them was in Germany where they were able to take an atom and then like transport it from one end of a room to another end of a room. And there's stories out there like that, but you can't find any white papers on it. That's the thing. Like, you know, you can't find any like doctoral notes on it. Like, you know, this is procedure A didn't work. And at this time and date, we tried procedure B. That's the research you and I get into. You know, that's the boring stuff, but that's the actual physical research. What do you think?
Well, yeah, because when you get into some of the details, which again, I'm not claiming to be an expert physicist by any means, or even a quantum physicist, but I've studied enough astronomy to understand some of the big fields, again, of different research. But when you look at quantum mechanics and some of the things that they discuss, they recognize that there's this randomness that's there to it appears over here, and this one's appearing to talk to this one across, you know, big spaces, that it understands like beyond the speed of light. It's part of the space, the fabric of space time itself. But the one thing is they can't manage it. One of the big things of quantum theory is its unpredictability. And that's why they're trying their best as it relates to like quantum computing, you know, in trying to, the reason we don't have quantum computers today is because they haven't come to the point of being able to manage and isolate and to control the unpredictable nature of things. Now, again, doesn't mean that they won't figure it out, but in some of these other things, as you mentioned, we're not there yet. Now, in many ways, as it relates to understanding quantum theory, they're like kindergartners, you know, understanding. I'm not picking on them. They're smart, brilliant people. But in the big scheme of the full knowledge of being able to get what we have in science fiction about wormholes and bridges across and the Marvel movies, I mean, not even close to getting that. And then even if they did understand the mechanics, how would we have the energy required to even implement such a plan if we fully understood it?
You know, and that's where a lot of these experiments is then taken off planet into space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do a little bit of research into this field, and I know that there has been some questionable experiments that have been done in space. One of these days I'll talk about that. But you know, if you messed up just a little bit, with what we're talking about. It could be cataclysmic, could it not, with some of these experiments?
Well, if we let's remember too. Let's go back to what you were describing is an atom bomb. I mean, this is something that is extremely. It is extremely. It's not easy to do. Otherwise, all the nations of the world would do it. How many nations are there? You know, under 10, maybe that are able to have and produce some sort of nuclear bomb or a hydrogen bomb, or whatever, atom bomb. So this isn't really easy. It takes again a lot of very specifics and managed intentionality. So that being the case, what you have in a bomb, what they're doing there, it's you know, for example, we know in atomic, what do? You take uranium. Why? Well, uranium has a lot of protons in it. Well, so those are big, right? Protons are big as it maybe connects with the Higgs boson as an example of a subatomic particle. Well, they're not taking uranium and shooting it together at the Hadron Collider. So in that regard, could they blow something up? I don't think so. I don't, because again, even there, colliding something together is different. In an atomic bomb, what do you have? I mean, you have fission, right? So you have, that is colliding something, but they're doing it in a very specific way with a lot of protons, the full thing, not just some atomic particle. So is there a risk there?
A little bit.
Maybe there is, you know, not that I've ever understood so far. That doesn't mean I understand everything by any means, but it's kind of apples and oranges.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I'm not an expert on CERN, obviously. I've done my share of research into the topic and be honest with you, I've always found the topic to be kind of dry and boring besides, you know, the theatrical stuff that happens there, the very highly questionable theatrical stuff that has been done there, the Shiva statue and the, potentially the video where they were doing some sort of a, you know, satanic ritual and sacrificing somebody. The Gothard Tunnel, that's a whole nother story.
We should talk about that.
Yeah, that's spooky.
You know, a couple things first. You know, so again, you know, here we are in our, you know, I got my card for the Illuminati. I printed it out and I signed it. that there's no doubt there's some interesting things, okay, that are currently unexplainable, and we try to be logical and we would say, well, why would they do this? Again, I don't read hearts, but people talk about the CERN logo, that it's a circle and they're doing it as if a subatomic particle is going in and going around the circle, because you know the CERN's about 17 miles, the tunnel's about 17 miles or so. Now Okay. I understand why you would have that, but yet I do find it interesting that the logo, and I'm sure you'll put this up in the video, shows 666.
Yeah. Now, did you have to make it look like that?
Yeah. So now were these guys here? Here's the other thing too, is look, let's be honest here. Christian theology, eschatology, the study of end time events, from a world's perspective, hear me carefully, is a bunch of wacko nonsense, okay? This idea that Jesus is going to come flying out of the sky, that there's going to be this group of people raptured up, that there's that the Antichrist is going to show up, and they're going to be, again, from a world's perspective, myth, fairy tale.
We're crazy.
Yeah, we're crazy, okay. Do I believe the Bible? Yes, 100%. So have there ever been any scientific atheists, agnostics that have ever done anything intentionally to mock Christian biblical eschatology? Yes. Okay. So could it be, is it possible that these guys are nefarious Satan worshipers and they're putting 666 in there? Could be. Could it also be that they are mockers and they did it to make Christians freak out and have videos like we're doing? Yes. So what's the truth? Not sure.
Do you think it could be a scoff at God? You know, kind of like the Tower of Babel.
Well, there's no doubt that the world scoffs at God, but then again, to a God that they allegedly don't believe in, they're agnostics at the most or atheists at the worst. Could they be mocking God? Well, they'd be mocking the Bible, at least, in trying to implement a 666 figure in their very logo. Again, this is where I just want to encourage, you and I were talking about this, that you got to be a critical thinker. You got to stay open-minded, but you also got to stay careful in your research and what you say. Because, for example, let's talk about we can bring this up now. We can come back to the Shiva goddess thing later. But one of the things, if you go on, I have it here, CERN, human, or no, the Gothard, if people want to type this in, Gothard Base Tunnel Opening Ceremony. What people are now are associating this Gothard Tunnel is 35 miles. It's a railway tunnel that was meant for economic reasons. Okay. But so this tunnel was opened, several years ago, but in December 16, it was fully operational and they had this opening ceremony. Okay. Now
Bizarro land.
It's in the same vicinity. When I say vicinity, within 100 miles of CERN. Okay. So, but now with the ceremony, CERN, the idea of CERN, the word CERN gets thrown on there. And so it's like, it's connected with CERN. Well, then if you start there and you watch this completely pagan ceremony, I mean, it was crazy. Orgiastic. It had a goat head. A guy on a goat that was mating with a woman, this bestiality, all this other occultic symbolism, no doubt, undeniable, horrible. But here's my question. How is it connected with CERN? Like provable, not just because it had CERN in the title. It's not, it doesn't, CERN wasn't officially connected with this opening ceremony. CERN is many, many miles away.
And I could tell you right now, because you just said that, people are going to zero in with the Illuminati occult crap, but it's true though. And, one of the things that me and Mondo are bringing up is the fact that some people don't do their research and they link things together and, rightly so, the Gothard Tunnel opening through the mountain pass, which was a technological achievement, by the way.
Yeah, it was a
huge technological achievement. But once again, guys, just like CERN with the 666 in their name, did you have to go like completely Halloween on your freaking ceremony? There wasn't a happy thing in that.
No, like, that was 100% occultic. No 100%. Doubt.
Who we're in not the heck
it.
Designed
I mean, I would not even recommend people watching it.
No.
But again, where's the provable connection that somehow CERN people are saying, see, this is an example of CERN's occultic behavior. Now, what they're doing is they're associating a couple things. So this is where, again, research, and you can lead somebody down, and especially in some of these videos are very persuasive. So let me give you another example. If you go to if you put in symmetry, okay, just the word symmetry and the CERN movie. So one of the videos I was watching, they showed the trailer. If you watch the trailer for Symmetry, it absolutely is connected with CERN. Clearly, there's no doubt about that. The Gothard Base Tunnel ceremony. Again, I'm open minded. Show me some 100% connection with CERN. But the Symmetry movie, yes. So what happens is if you show the Symmetry trailer, 3 minutes long, anybody can go watch it. And I watched one guy, again, Christian believer guy. I don't know his heart. I don't know anything about him. I just know that as he was presenting it, he kept saying over and over, hey, everybody, what does science have to do with this? This is all about science. CERN is about science, science, science. And so he's leading you to watch this trailer And he's casting doubt and saying, well, yeah, why would scientific nuclear engineers participate in this sort of occultic imagery? Okay, that's the trailer. Well, if you go to the site, the cemetery site, they go down and they'll say in the rest of it, which this guy didn't mention, clearly, I don't know, mate, did he not do his research and look at the rest of the explanation of this movie? I'm not recommending the movie, okay? Now, what's interesting is that CERN, this does bring up some valid questions. But CERN, these nuclear physicists were taking what they were doing as it relates to real scientific research. And it says right in there, CERN takes physics and connects it with art, artistic license. So when you get into some of the weird stuff in this movie, okay, you're taking real science and somebody came along and said, let's take the real science and let's make this artistic occultic stuff. So what I'm saying is it's not just science. It's somebody came along and intentionally put in art, artistic movie making. Now, my question is, who are these occultic weirdos that are taking this stuff and they're using CERN as its launching point? Now, again, it brings up some valid questions, but I think for the most part, we don't want to just say this is all science, 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 because in fact, they say very clearly, no, this is science and art coming together.
Yeah, and you know, I have a lot of questions about the whole symmetry thing. I think that's the one that had the guy that looked like Obama in it. And you know, it I don't know, like, why did you have to go prancing around inside the Large Hadron Collider? Why are we out in the desert? Why does it look so completely occultic? And once again, I will ask the question, what does this have anything to do with science? Mm-hmm. But we live in a world now where, I'll tell you this much, Mondo, we have always lived in a world where you have science and occultism mixed together. Mm-hmm. You know, from Egypt to now, we've always had that. The two have always shared a link, which I think is probably upsetting to guys like you who, you know, you're actually scientists. You do the math, you do the work, you went to college, you know, you got the degrees, and you know that is your actual skill base. And you know, a lot of people will say, well, you know, fooey to everything you did because of this CERN video. But you know, like what we said, it does bring up a lot of very good discussionable topics as to why we would need to see any of this. But I want to ask you this other question before we get off of CERN. Can CERN help humanity, or do you think inevitably CERN would be used to hurt humanity? And now that's not exactly a scientific question, it's a morality question, because if the same people who are putting on all these very occultic-like things around CERN, what do you think their hearts are for the future of this machine?
Sorry, I got a tickle in my throat. A couple things. The first would be that, you know, I appreciate legitimate research. I mean, as you know, we're building a research observatory here in central Oklahoma, you know, to do and to keep an eye on things and astronomically and stuff like that. So I appreciate that. I'm going to be doing, you know, installing a spectrograph on a telescope and looking at things, and it'll be kind of fun. So I appreciate real research, and I think that no doubt that CERN is doing real research. So in that regard, hey, can you do it without risk of creating a black hole? I think so far, yes. And so I would encourage that level of research. On the other hand, it does bring up other questions. I can be very much a conspiracy theorist. I have to guard myself because I love conspiracy theory. I think conspiracy theory is 100% true in general, because why? 1 John 5:19, the whole world lies under the power of the sway of the wicked one. So there is a master conspirator who's working behind the scenes to corrupt the world to his agenda, which ends up being, as we know in Revelation 13, a worldwide government that is ruled by the dragon and the Antichrist. So yes, everything is making its way there. Now, you asked about the people behind who the other people are behind the scenes that are creating some of the artistic stuff and how they committed. My question would be, when you watch the symmetry imagery, it's like, how in the world did these people with their art and their occultic art convince somebody at CERN, whoever's leading, the head leader, to allow a very, I would say, neutral scientific endeavor to be connected with this? So are there people at CERN potentially that have an occultic background, again, that are maybe pulling the strings, maybe they do the paychecks? You have the actual guy down here, so the nuclear physicist going, I'm just doing the work, man. I'm turning the button on and on, doing my stuff. And then you have some of the politicians or the regulators or whatever up above. Probably, there's no doubt, somebody involved there, again, allowed and made the decision to allow them to come in. I mean, think about this. They were allowed to come in and film intentionally on the premises, and then to create a documentary or a film that had totally overly occultic symbols. Normally you'd be like, we don't want to be associated with that. But that stuff's crazy. Why would you? We're not going to associate our pure research with that kind of occultic stuff. So what does that tell you? That tells you that somewhere, some in there, somebody is open-minded enough, or maybe they are part of the agenda. Maybe they are one of the scientists, but somebody that has the power. And I think this is some of the stuff that Tom Horn brings up in his material. Somebody that has the authority, I'll say it that way, the authority in the chain of command, was able to speak in such a way, opening up portals, etc. We can segue a little bit to the Shiva. This supposedly, allegedly, if we want to say the most innocent framing, is that India sent over this statue of the goddess Shiva as a gift, because India is one of the many nations that's involved. But you would think, why did they accept, somewhere, some line, some guy up there, accept the goddess Shiva, the goddess of destruction, this androgynous figure in the theology of Indian Hinduism, is put right on the front porch. As you walk up, there it is, as a gift, and they're going to allow this gift to be out there to be the visual representation of the science that's going on. Now, granted, they spin it in such a way that, Shiva is the goddess of research, and you're like, no, it's the goddess of destruction. It's actually, especially, I have it written down here, the Nataraja pose with sitting to the left like this. People can look this up. It's a pose that's geared specifically towards the destruction of the old with the replacing of a new. Well, Mondo, you're sensationalizing this. This is simply just the destruction of a subatomic particle, looking for the creation of something new. Okay, well, that's a great spin, but maybe it's as innocent as that. Am I that naive? No. So you have these other things that absolutely beg further questions of the occultic connections, 100%.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be no different if you put the Ouroboros out there, you know, the snake eating its own tail. That's always used. And once again, you know, as we're leaving the topic of CERN, occultic and science, or is it occultic science, or is it the fact that you have people that are occultic in power, in charge of one of the most largest power generating machines that we have ever created? And I think, in my own personal way, CERN will be used negatively. Not that the scientists there, and I don't know these people, but I don't think that, you know, I don't think that they want to be used negatively. I think they want to be there to do the science. I mean, if you look at the infrastructure of CERN, if you look at how long it took to build the dang thing, mm-hmm. you talk about a labor of love to get CERN created. And then you're going to turn around with all your science and your math, you know, with all your chemistry, your nuclear physics, and you're going to start doing hocus pocus stuff. Like, why'd you study for 10 years? You know, why didn't you just go be a witch? You know, you didn't need to make the LHC. You just needed to get a scrying mirror, you know, and start staring into the eyes of a cat if you really wanted to do all this crap, right? Or whatever it is that the occultism does nowadays. So let's talk about something. You teased me a long time ago about the electric universe.
Okay.
And it's been a while since we've had this discussion, but update me. What is the electric universe? Why do I keep hearing about it? And why does it matter? I know it's a big mouthful. I know, but give us a little bit of it.
Well, I'll tell you this again. I'll say right up front, I'm no expert on the electric universe. However, I've been watching some videos and stuff lately. And one of the things that I find interesting is, again, I'm an astronomy guy. So, you know, when I took astronomy in college and even now, you know, I'm the nerd at night that when I go to bed at night, I'm reading my astronomy, you know, textbook. I mean, this is what interests me. And so, as well as Astronomy Magazine, hearing all the latest stuff. So, you know, my frame of reference is the traditional conventional, you know, astronomical paradigm, you know, astronomy paradigm. So, here's the summary. You know, you have four main forces. You got the strong and the weak nuclear force. You have the gravitational force, and then you have electricity. Okay, so these are the four fundamental forces that you have operating in our universe. Okay, everybody agrees on that. But what's interesting, though, is what I find is in the electric universe is this idea that the typical conventional idea is that gravity. Is the main force that holds everything together across the universe, galaxies, etc., that things are gravitationally bound. But it's interesting that, and again, obviously gravity is true and gravity exists. You have Einstein's general theory he have a special theory of relativity and his gravitational theory of gravitational models. Okay. Many of those clearly have been verified in a variety of ways. So no one's questioning that. But however, what I find interesting is some of the ways in which astronomy, the modern astronomy movement, is they have models, as we all do. I mean, okay, we've never been inside of a sun. You know, the basic model is thermonuclear fusion. Okay. And that's different than fission. Okay. So, but what I find interesting, and this is where some of the questions about the electric universe says, no, electricity is the strongest force in the universe, not gravity. And so there's two things that come to mind. Number one is the way that the modern astronomical community ignores the electric universe theory. And they dismiss it, no different than in the biological world of Darwinism, of even neo-Darwinism. Well, I wouldn't even say neo-Darwinism, original Darwinism, in that they reject the idea of creation. Okay, so what that means is they've closed their mind. They're like, nope, even though we don't understand how organic life came from non-organic life, we're not interested in any other ideas. Well, in the modern astronomy world, that's what you have is they'll say, no, yeah, we've looked at the electric universe. It doesn't fit. Okay, well, so the fact that they dismiss it is I don't like dismissing anything. The second thing is, for example, we've all heard of dark energy or dark matter as an example. Well, when they look out and they see these large galaxies, especially the beautiful spirals, they come to recognize that, well, boy, gravity by itself isn't a sufficient explanation to recognize how these things are held together. So in order to maintain their theory that gravity is the main force, they say, oh, dark matter must be out there. There must be this invisible dark matter. That dark matter produces what? Gravity. Because invisible dark matter, it's dark because it can't be observed. So somehow it's outside of the realm of observation in all of the ways of observing things, you know, from gamma rays all the way to infrared. et cetera, on the electromagnetic spectrum. So what they're doing, though, is so they've created, they've fabricated the idea of dark matter to explain what they, what the typical formulas of gravity don't work. Well, so far, again, what is science? Science is something that we observe. It's something that we experiment. We have a hypothesis. We do some experimentations and we repeat. Okay. Hypothesis, experiment, repeat. Now we have proof. But as they go to look and define dark matter as an example, they can't find it. All these things, but yet they still hold on to it. It's like, again, looking at life. Darwinism does not produce life. It can't. But they hold on to it, and they just say, nope, we're going to hold on to it. So they blind themselves to other ideas. So in come the people that are promote, again, true, I guess, science. And they'll say, if you look at, for example, here on Earth, and they do experiments with electrical currents, what they're finding is that the electrical currents will match the way that they show themselves in experiments. They'll show themselves in spiral ways, which seems to match exactly what you find in some of the galaxies, as well as these filaments. It's interesting. So all that being said is, the electric universe, is it the answer? I don't know enough to say yes, but it is enough to show that I'm interested in looking at it more as a possible explanation for some of the other mechanisms, because what they're showing is when they do some of these experiments here on Earth and they extrapolate it out there, like, wow, that's exactly what we see out, especially in some of the pictures of, like, even the new James Webb, some of the pictures you see there. If you get in really close and you compare it to some of the experiments on Earth, you see it follows the same imagery. So that's kind of the background to the electrical universe controversy versus modern astronomy.
I just wonder, the day that we go to film some of this with your, was it $12,000 telescope that you have? What do you think we're going to be able to see with it? Do you think we're going to be able to prove any of these hypotheses or be able to recognize what it is that they're saying?
Well, certainly visually we would be able to confirm like some of the stuff that you see with the James Webb. You know, this isn't a $20 billion or $10 billion James Webb telescope that, you know, we're putting in again in central Oklahoma. But what you do see in some of the clarity and the resolution from James Webb, if they say, hey, we're taking a picture of the Helix Nebula or something, and this is what we're seeing there. The Pillars of Creation, this is one of the latest ones. I can go like, oh, I can go take a picture of that. I'll go out at night, calculate it in. I'll get, you know, 20 hours of data because we actually are going to have two telescopes. We have a 12 and a half inch CDK telescope, which is very specific. And then we also have a 6-inch refractor that we're going to be using. And I'll be able to take pictures, two different cameras at the exact same time. And then I'm hoping to process them together, and we're going to see how that all works out. But nevertheless, we'll be able to create our own Pillars of Creation or Helix Nebula image and then compare that with what you see that James Webb doing. Now, is ours going to be as same resolution? Clearly, we're not. We're not spending we don't have $10 billion. But the we'll still be able to get some great images, no doubt. So in some of the things that some of the people in the electric universe are describing, some of the filaments that they see coming across, will we be able to confirm those images? Absolutely. Will we be able to take images of Apophis, the asteroid coming? Absolutely. To track it, some of the software that we're working through, it's called astrometry, where you are able to calculate orbits and see things moving with background stars. Will we be able to do some of that? Yes. And so this is some of the stuff that's exciting. So when we talk about those that say James Webb is fake, Hubble's fake, all these pictures are fake, they're all Photoshopped. Sorry, man, just not true. Not true at all. you know, I had one lady email me in, and again, God bless her. I don't know her heart. She's like, you know, you need to realize that Mars is fake. There is no, it's just a point of light. And that's not true. I mean, you can go, you know, when people go outside at night, when they look up at Mars or Jupiter, Jupiter's bright right now. Saturn's certainly not as bright. Mars has its bright moments, but they look up and what do they see? Even in a binoculars, if they would do that, they see a point of light. Well, that's what you see, but in a telescope, that is not what you see. You actually see, you see it big in the eyepiece. You see the bands going on Jupiter. You can see, you can photograph the great red spot. These are not just points of light. It's far more than that. Saturn easily can see the rings. And when you take a picture that Hubble does, and there's something called the Cassini division. I was out a couple weeks ago looking through our refractor, and it was the first time that I had a clear night. I was able to see the Cassini division with my own eyes. I'm like, oh, there it is. Perfectly clear. No doubt. I haven't got to use the big scope yet because we're waiting on the mount. But this is the type of research where I know that this is that several people have got caught up into some of the flat Earth thinking. And again, some people are good people. I'm not denying that. But to me, when people come and say people who's a person's a flat Earth and they're like, no, Mondo, this is all a bunch of lies. It's just a point of light. I go, I don't know what to tell you. That's just not true. I don't know where you're getting your information from, but what we're seeing here is images. Again, I can take pictures, as many amateur astronomers do, of these same images that the James Webb telescope is doing, and we can confirm that it's absolutely true in the same coordinates. So real research in that regard, how it all comes to play and how it's going to affect some people who have embraced the idea that NASA is in the James Webb is all 100% fabrication and lie. They don't trust anything. Well, again, I'm not here to defend NASA, but I'm also here to say some of that stuff. I can't confirm everything that NASA claims by no means, but can I confirm some stuff? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and here's another thing. The Lucifer telescope that's out there at Mount Graham in Arizona. Mm-hmm. I want to know whenever you get the big telescope up and running, because for one thing, it looks like something that you would launch an anti-tank missile out of. But I wonder if you'll get the same effect that Steve Quayle and Timothy Alberino and Tom Horn talked about, where the scientists at the Lucifer telescope said that they sometimes have to wait for the UFOs to clear in order to see better and further. Have you ever had that type of experience? I know it's kind of a random question, but I've been meaning to ask you that question because I want to know, you know, that's a very specific thing that you're about to tell a Christian film crew. Oh, yeah, we have to wait for the UFOs to clear. You know, is it the debris that's within geosync orbit that they're talking about, or do you think they're talking about something different?
No, these guys are way too smart because no doubt, like a couple things. This is out at Mount Graham, as you mentioned, in Arizona. And it's a very charged site, you know, and I speak that from a, not that I'm a psychic, but I mean, from a, what's the word? Paranormal perspective. There's claims. I haven't been there, but claims of this being a very charged site, Native American history, blah, blah, blah. So an astronomer, these guys are professional astronomers. Okay. They know the difference between a satellite, okay? You know, anybody can check this. If you go at night and you happen to get lucky, I've seen dozens of satellites at night going across the sky. And you're like, oh, look at that. Sometimes I've had them in my binoculars. I've watched them go across. Sometimes I've seen them go. And because of the way that the Earth is, again, I believe we live on a globe, but because of the way that the sky is, the you'll watch a satellite go. Sometimes you'll watch it go across the entire horizon. Other times you'll watch it go, and then it just as it's getting a certain place, it just vanishes out. Not a UFO. It's just the way that the light is reflecting off of that. depending on where the sun is as it relates to the time of night. Sometimes you can see it go most of the way across. Other times it goes for a certain slowly. I mean, slowly, but quickly, and then gone. Not a meteor. Okay, I know what a meteor looks like. They usually do not go slow. But I've also, what you see now is with stinking Elon Musk, not a friend of amateur astronomers, okay? Because he will photobomb your long-term astrophotography. And I had one of our friends of the ministry, he had emailed me and said, "Hey, Mondo, I saw something strange." He said, "I saw this string of pearls in the sky and it was coming across." And I was like, "Stop. You weren't seeing a UFO. You were seeing a recent release of 50 satellites by Elon Musk for the Starlink. And so sure enough, he came and he's like, "Oh, you know, you're right. That's what it was." And I go, "Yeah, it's, you see these things." So all that being said, these guys down at Mount Graham, if they say they're seeing something unique, they know that it's not, they know what a satellite going across the sky. People who, let me say this in a way that I don't want to be smug. That's not my heart at all. But what I find is the average person that has maybe bought into some of the legitimate questions that come up as it relates to a flat earth, they aren't people that are familiar with the night sky. I'm talking knowing some of the basics of astronomy, the way, even if you don't believe whatever, just some of the observable phenomena. The word phenomenon is this idea of what you observe. So the phenomenon of the night sky, as it relates to the way that the moon phases are, how they work, the sun setting, the sun, you know, sun rising, all the solstices, the equinoxes. Most people have no clue about some of this stuff that, as it relates to the planets, just observable. So I understand why, because they lack that background, how some of these things can be very persuasive. But again, going back to the immediate question, do I believe that these guys are ignorant? No. If they're saying that, I'm not saying it's true. I don't know them. But if they're saying that, they're not idiots.
Well, I mean, we know that they said that the Lucifer telescope is monitoring for some semblance of extraterrestrial life that they believe is heading towards the planet. Or at least that's one of the statements that they have made before. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, leads me to open an entire other podcast of questions of what exactly did you mean by that statement, that you're monitoring potential extraterrestrial life. You know, and a lot of ways theologically, I would have to ask, why does a Christian need to do that? And the other part would be, what do you know that we don't know? What are you expecting to tell us? Because I think that's part of the deception, personally. Yep.
Bingo.
I think that's part of the deception.
You know, and let's remember that the most of the astronomers that are astronomers in the Vatican, you know, as far as I can see, they have a religion. They have this religion, but most of them believe in evolution. Most of them are agnostic in their practice. They don't necessarily believe the Bible. They'll tell you that the Bible's framework, cosmological framework, is not true. So are they capable of being deceived? Yes. Now, if we take it at face value, what they're saying, that was the whole thing of calling it Lucifer. Well, you know, again, they could have chosen any acronym, but they chose that. Why? I don't know. It brings up a great question, though.
Yeah, I think the once again, I think a lot of the things that we've talked about today has been the delusion that is going to be coming, and the great illusion capabilities of some of these people, you know, to make you think something's out there that's not, and you know, potentially fear factor, right? Why not? So let's end it on this note. We recently got back and are settled in from our last adventure in the caves. And I had a member of the Patreon page, which, by the way, if you want to help support the show and have some one-on-one with yours truly and potentially some guests like Mondo. So you can ask us some very particular questions. You know, join the Patreon page. I think $3 to $5 is the cheapest that it gets. And you help to support the show. But crawling around the caves, I got asked, what is so important about the caves? Why do we need to put ourselves through the things that we just put ourselves through? I mean, I haven't released the video yet. I'm still editing. But our friend who's also on the Paleo Research Group, Brent Height of Brent Height Outdoors, you can go to his YouTube channel and watch the actual video of this last cave training that we were doing. It was exploration slash training. But I mean, we got to an area that was questionably 12 inches to 14 inches from floor to ceiling. And I'm kind of what they call a big boy. And for me to scoot through there, that was questionable, but you were almost on your hands and knees the whole time. I was so jealous because, man, that belly crawl for over 100 yards sucked for a while. But why are we doing it? Let me tell you why. And let's not skirt around this. We are after the biblical narrative, all right? Just like what L.A. Marzulli says, just like Tim Alberino, just like Steve Quayle and Tom Horn, just like prophecy watchers have said numerous times, we are after the definitive proof of the biblical narrative. And there has been for whatever reason, there has been within the United States a secret, I guess you could say, cabal of government officials who want to keep the knowledge of giant artifacts and giant skeletons away from the media, away from the public. Though we have all these different types of, you know, clippings of papers that you and I have shared before, we've talked about this, doesn't always mean that it's real. You know, the newspapers don't always mean that they're real. But when you have doctors from the 1800s, 1700s, the 1900s, 21st century, who are saying that they're finding extra large beings, you know, if we trusted these guys and their scientific methods back in the 1600s, how could we not expect them to be able to take just a simple, you know, measurement from toe to head and say, hey, this is, you know, the length of a giant? But these are the things that are being found in caves. All right. If for whatever reason, it's the most common place that we've seen to find is that they do a lot of ancestral worship. The Native Americans would. They have these extra large beings that are in caves. They were either dwelling in there or they were buried in there for ceremonial reasons. Some of the caves we've been into has one, possibly two, that are in there for ceremonial reasons that we're going to be working on excavating. And you know, as an archaeologist, I'm sure you appreciate the sheer amount of skill and work it comes into excavating. We've been on, obviously, some excavation sites, and it's a tremendous amount of work. It's not Indiana Jones walking around, you know, fighting off Nazis and swinging on his whip through the jungle. It's digging. It's a lot of work. You have to get to the site for one thing. So before I hand it over to Mondo, caves. We eventually think we're going to stumble in an area where we're going to find Paleolithic remains of people from the Paleolithic time that had interaction with giants, and we are going to find either the remains that were taken out, and maybe if we're lucky, there's still remains there, or we get on a place where we think there were remains, or this is a report of remains, and then we start doing scientific testing like eDNA gathering and other things. Metal detecting, testing for different frequencies and, you know, all different types of stuff. And I'll let Mondo talk about that. But you know, that's why we're going to these places and open fields. We're out in a bunch of different places. Caves is one of those places where if you stumble upon a place where no one has been, and then you may be the guy who stumbles upon, you know, something that's been around for 10,000 years or longer, who knows? Stuff like this is being found. One of these types of caves was actually found in France, where you know, there was these different paintings, pictographic paintings of all these different types of prehistoric animals that have died off out in the middle of France in a cave. And so deep into the cave, that's what was actually questionable. And the scientists were able to verify that this is real. This is an actual archaeological find. So that's kind of what we're doing. That's why we're hanging out in the caves. Mondo, I'm going to give it back to you.
Oh, I think so. The as with anything, you got to do research. And for those that have been part of archaeological pursuits, I remember the first time that when I was in Israel, when I was digging in Gath, the first assignment that I got that week, I was younger, no doubt younger than now, but I'm digging in and man, I was just like a maniac. Cause normally you dig pretty carefully, but they're like, no, we want this thing to go down as quick as possible. And I'm like, well, what am I digging? They go, well, you're digging the dump. So I'm like, really? I come all this way and I have to dig the dump out. So, it's not always glorious by any means, but part of it is for that particular instance, they needed me to dig the dump out. This was like an ancient dump, in order to do the process of elimination. And so we're in a lot of caves. We're in grounds. Why? Because again, in our research and in my particular research, as it relates to some of the Smithsonian material, we've talked about that before. It's very clear in some of the original field reports that 7-8 footers were being excavated. So we're trying to come along that place where, again, now they deny it. And so, again, one of our goals is to try to go and to say, again, we're not looking to take anything out. That's not our goal or to whatever. Our goal is to find it and document it and to say, here it is. And it would be great to take a piece of hair or something for DNA testing. But we're not even sure we're going to do that. But the main thing is simply just to find these things and to document it in order to bring the truth out. So that requires going into caves. As we've seen in some of our research, people are like, oh yeah, when I was a kid, they everybody knew they took out an 8-foot giant over there. Well, who took it? Well, they gave the Native American stuff to the local university, and then they gave the bones to the Smithsonian. You're like, here we go. So is there a conspiracy there? Well, and yes, there is the full conspiracy that everybody decides. No, probably not. There's always balance or truth in the middle somewhere, but we're going to these caves in order to research and to check because, and again, we're getting GPS, ground penetrating radar equipment and other, soil analyzing equipment for these reasons, electrical stuff. But nevertheless, the goal is to present the truth again and to present a narrative that sometimes is contrary to the conventional archaeological, as we've seen so many times in some of the places that we've gone. But hard work, it's worth it. We're trying to check it out. We're trying to be on the front lines. As always, we tell people, if you or a family member or a relative or somebody has a mound on your property that you want us to excavate, we'll do due diligence on it for sure, but you know, we're happy to come alongside, especially depending on where it's located.
Yeah, that, and also, you know, if you have any caves that are on your private property that if you need exploring and you have particular reasons, you can email us. You can email me at the American Vidix Show @gmail.com, and we can discuss that. But, you know, once again, we do have to do our due diligence because occasionally you get some absolutely crazy people with absolutely crazy stories who just want to be on camera. And that's not what we're about. Like, if it wasn't for the fact that we're not filming this to show people what we're doing, I don't think we would be filming it. You know, I mean, the archaeological documentation is coming from you. So, you know, if when things are found, they'll be documented and done the professional, correct way, which is one of the things that we want to state. You know, we are doing this through the scientific method process. You know, one of the next areas that we'll be going back to is a place that we visited already where there, I think it was the 9-footer. So, you know, one of the things that I would like to do is I'd like to get soil samples, try and see if we can get some eDNA there. And the reason why is that if every single giant skeleton has been excavated, maybe there is remains of the soft tissue that has then, you know, been rotted away and left over in the soil. Maybe it's a long shot because, you know, with a lot of these places, you have almost 100 years worth of farming agriculture that's happened in these lands. Like many of the mounds that we've gone to, mm-hmm. you know, completely destroyed because of agriculture. So, you know, it's hard work, but, you know, it's satisfying at the same time. And I think eventually we are going to stumble upon something. But this is the difference between what we're doing and a lot of other people. We're actually exploring. We're not internet explorers. You know, we're not writing books based off of internet research. We are going out and getting our hands into the mud, as me and Mondo have done, I don't know how many times now. And I'll tell you this much, I really appreciate the amount of work that it takes to be a good steward in archaeology, because the tomb cave whooped us, broke our equipment, broke shovels. I mean, it got pretty bad. And there are still other people that are out there that are joining the team that are helping us out. And, you know, we potentially have elongated skulls that we had to do some investigation into. But, you know, once again, man, America's filled full of stuff like this. Mm-hmm. It's filled full of stuff like this. And you just got to get out there and you got to investigate it. So I encourage people, go out, learn about your area, and you may find that you have stuff like this right here in your own backyard. Mondo, that's all we got for right now. Can you let people know where they can find your information at for Prophecy Watchers?
You know what? Prophecywatchers.com. You can certainly find us. We have an app that you can download. You can find us on YouTube really easy. And that's kind of where our main spot is for now. But we have a magazine that we report things on. And so there's, you know, again, there's a lot of things that we often say that we're on the trail. You know, where there's a lot of things going on. There's this astronomy side, the Psalm 19 project that we're working on. We have the archaeological side that we're working on. And then, of course, all the Bible studies and other things that we're doing. So it's good. Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, get out there and, you know, help support Prophecy Watchers. And if you'd like to, you can help support me. I just want to say, man, thanks for coming on. You know, I appreciate what you do, and I appreciate the you know, there's a lot of risk and danger in preaching and teaching the word of Jesus. And you know, we need more people like you who are not afraid to get out there and do it. And I encourage more people, you know, spread the gospel, spread the good news of Christ. You know, so that's all we got for you right now, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening, everyone. Have a good day. God bless. Take care. Mountain State Survival covers your basis for your planning, prepping, evacuation, bugging in, or bugging out needs. They carry anything from educational material, camping supplies, emergency services supplies, food, first aid, survival kit and equipment, shooting gear, survival gear, tactical gear. They carry it all. They got it in stock. Give Mountain State Survival a ring. That's mountain-state-survival.com. Get this type of supplies while you still can. 304-517-6935. Mountain State Survival is one of the only places that I know of currently that is still carrying the delicious Peak Refuel meal that is ready to eat. It's personally the only thing that I eat at this point whenever I go out camping. Whenever we have any type of emergency or disaster situation, that is the meal that I stick with. And you can find that at mountain-state-survival.com. Use Rekker5 for a 5% discount on your overall purchase. That's Rekker5, mountainstatesurvival.com. You can find this show on the Heroes Nation app. Heroes Nation is the Heroes Nation app you can download in the App Store. It's up and coming. They got a lot of cool information on there. That is the main backup site so far for the American Vindictus Show. We'll also have some stuff on there that won't be on YouTube. It won't be on Rumble. It'll either be only on the GSRadio.net, who is the host of the American Vindictus Show, or it will only be an exclusive for Heroes Nation. And with that, I mean, you know, stuff that we're doing with the cave exploration, with the archaeological stuff. I'm going to start getting into a lot of paranormal talks and, you know, coming at that from my law enforcement and Christian perspective, and be having guests on, and that will be exclusive to Heroes Nation. So make sure that you give them some love. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, everybody, for supporting me. God bless you, and have a good day.
All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.